Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we have a really fascinating show today. You know, I kid around sometimes and say I'm the left voice of this station, but the reality is, in this group, I may be on the right. We have a group of community activists here that are going to talk about some very important subjects, and I'd like to introduce them. Rayanne and Napoleon, a assistant professor of chemistry at Santa Barbara City College. Kristen Walk, a student at Santa Barbara City College. Sarah Miani, a parent and activist in the community. And I'm really happy to announce my producer, after all these years, is finally willing to speak because she is so enthralled with the subject, Lisa Newman. Welcome, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
So, the gun debate is not only so important to our society and because it affects people's lives, but it's also tearing apart the social contract between, you know, the red and the blue. Better way to put that. And so this is a subject that really needs to be dealt with. The group of people we have today are really trying to do something about it. So, Rayanne, you're taking part in a march in the next couple of weeks that involves, I guess, the whole country. It's going to be a long walk if it's the whole country. So tell us about it.
Very similar to the Women's March that happened last year, there's a march happening in Washington, D.C. It's entitled March for Our Lives, and it's coming from the Stoneman Douglas High School students themselves. And much like the Women's March, there's going to be sister marches happening all over the country. And so I was very moved by this idea, and so I kind of hit the ground running and tried to get something started here in Santa Barbara on that same date.
And the group is going to do a march. What is the actual event, and what day is it?
So our march, like the National March, is happening on Saturday, March 24th here in Santa Barbara. It's going to start at De La Guerra Plaza. We'll have student voter registration and some tabling happening at 10 a.m., followed by some speeches and music things and different things from different people in the community that want to share different things at the rally, essentially. And then at 12 p.m. we take the streets. So we're going to leave De La Guerra Plaza. We're going to head down to State Street. From State Street, we're going, help me, Christian, what's the address again? 210 West Victoria?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is the site of a recent shooting here in Santa Barbara. And so we're going to end at the local park there.
So you mentioned voter registration. And, you know, the question of how change takes place is partly a matter of protest, but it's also, in a democracy, partly or significantly a matter of showing up at the ballot to make sure that representatives have the same belief system you do. So, Sarah, you are involved with the whole voter registration drive. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, Rayanne mentioned student voter registration, and some people may not know that you don't have to be 18 to register to vote. In California and in many other states, you can pre-register to vote before you turn 18. Thanks in part to Hannah Beth Jackson here in the state. At 16 years old, you can fill out a voter registration form and check the pre-register box. And that way, when you turn 18, you'll be able to vote automatically. So some of some of the registration will be pre-registration going on at this march. There are also opportunities to register in schools. California statewide has these 2 weeks twice a year that are designated high school voter education weeks. And that'll come up after the march this year at the end of April. So I can talk more about that later. But I'm really interested to hear about how March for Our Lives is emphasizing voter registration and informing students about how important it is to vote.
Well, you know, voter registration is half the job. The other job is to vote. And I remember one of the more depressing moments in my 12-year teaching career at City College is after a presidential election years ago, I asked the students how many people voted, and three out of 35 voted. And I asked them why they didn't vote, and I should have. I was tired. It didn't matter. You know, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, if people aren't going to vote, then they're essentially giving their vote to the other side. And so half of the job is to register them. The other half is to motivate them to go out and vote. So is that part of, like, for example, let's go back to the march. And what is the actual goal of the march? What are you going to, besides just walking around the streets, what is an awareness? We're pretty aware in this town, but what is the goal?
I think you're totally right. Amongst millennials and young people, we've always kind of had a problem of getting people out to the polls and actually voting. I think this march is twofold. One is looking at the legislative side of things and kind of saying we want our politicians to finally take a stand in the face of sort of a lot of money in politics and a lot of other things and start to have a conversation at least and pass some comprehensive gun control reform. I think the second part of that goal is to try to get young people, and that's what this whole movement's about, out participating in the political process. That takes the form of going out and marching like we're doing, registering, but also, like you saying, following that up with actually going to the poll and voting. So it's a multi-pronged process.
Can I just add one thing that I think is really interesting as the quote-unquote adult that's involved in this, although that kind of makes me giggle a little bit.
That's not insulting to Sarah, is it?
No, I guess it was insulting to me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
As we gathered a couple weeks ago with the students that were interested in helping organize this event here in Santa Barbara, one thing I pointed out to them was that Columbine happened 19 years ago, and the two students that were sitting there at the table at the time were 20 years old. And since Columbine, a number of school shootings has happened, and even one here in Santa Barbara very recently. And so I think for the student organizers and the students that are going to the march, gun violence in the school and mass shootings in the school is very normal, and it's been normalized. Whereas I remember when Columbine happened, and I remember how shocking it was. And I was only in high school at the time, but I remember it quite well. And so since then, it's just been nothing but the same. And so
and increasing, actually.
And increasing. And so I think for me, as the, you know, one of the teachers, one of the, like I said, adult organizers, ugh, makes me gag a little, trying to help this movement along here in Santa Barbara, I just want to highlight how weird it is that it's that this all is normal.
Yeah, my daughter's 20, and she's grown up in that whole era. She's very much used to hearing about these horrible tragedies. Not that she's not inspired to do something about it, and I think that's kind of one of the greatest things about the Parkland kids is that they are outspoken, they are well-spoken, they are brave, and they are social media savvy. So, you know, they are really doing a great job, and they don't look like they're going to slow down anytime soon.
Is there anything that this walk is doing that's directed at Santa Barbara, our community, as opposed to just the national issue? I mean, is there any, you know, community-specific things you'd like to see happen?
I mean, personally, I'd just like to see a lot more involvement in any kind of political organizations. I think for a long time, sort of the social institutions, the clubs, the kind of the, I remember there's this book called, something about like the bowling clubs have declined and we don't bowl anymore. And a lot of these social groups and clubs that we used to have throughout American history have kind of depleted. And along with that is the political side of things. I think we're trying to send some energy back into a community that might be and the majority agreeing with us in our legislative efforts, but at least having them come out there and showing their faces and being part of a movement. I think just reinvigorating that a little bit and moving it along. But you're right, political movements in American history have taken decades to accomplish their major goals. But I think this is, you know, part of a long haul.
Yes, but I think we've been asleep a little bit here, and I think it's time to re-energize and realize that it is we the people, and if we want something changed, we have to do it. We can't wait for someone else to do it.
And I'd just like to add a little bit, too. I think for myself personally, and I think for the other organizers as well, I think one part of the march here locally is not necessarily local legislation and things like that, you know, but also highlighting gun violence in general is a problem. And it's not necessarily these mass shootings. I mean, they are definitely a problem, but it's also gun violence and also the victims of gun violence and who that is and putting a face to it. People of color and children are disproportionately affected by gun violence. And so reminding our community of that.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, in using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Rayanne Napoleon, a assistant professor of chemistry at Santa Barbara City College, Kristen Walk, a student actively involved in the March Walk for Gun Violence, and he's a student at Santa Barbara City College, Sarah Miani, who is a parent and an activist in town, and our producer, Lisa Newman. And I remember when, you know, you mentioned before that you remember Columbine. I remember when Lincoln was shot. And so, violence goes way back. But the thing that I was commenting on the last 30 years is that the reason, you know, students don't protest like they did in my day in Vietnam, which made a difference, the Vietnam protests made a difference, is because students had no dog in that hunt. There was no draft. So students sort of picked issues that didn't really affect politics because it didn't affect them directly. And I think what happened in Florida just changed that whole reality where all of a sudden students today in Florida, and what you're doing today is exactly what we did in the 60s in Vietnam. And the young people's voice is very, very powerful. And it really hasn't been used since Vietnam. So I think, if anything,
what's really changed is who's doing the protesting. Because something's really wrong here when 70% or 75% of Americans think that assault weapons should be banned, and there's no chance that's going to be banned in those states that have the biggest violence. Mm-hmm. So I have to, you know, that long speech leads me to a question. And if you look at some of the editorials and good, you know, public thinkers around the subject in the last 3-4 weeks, there seems to be a theme that is worth discussing, and that is, can we put ourselves in the other side's mindset? You know, we here in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara feel that our police force is competent and fair. We don't fear, you know, being walking down the street and getting shot at. But, you know, half the country, whether it's true or not, really believes that they're threatened. There's a belief among people in this country that they need guns to protect themselves. I won't even get into the, you know, protect them from a rogue government. But there is a very large group of people throughout the country that believe that guns make a difference in their own safety, and safety is something that they will vote on as a single issue. How do we have a – now, you know, you can shake your head and say, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with it either, but that's the reality. If we want to get something done, we almost have to think about what it is that the other side is – what makes them – how can anybody support putting in – permitting an assault rifle in a school? And yet – there's a reason, if you think about it, that some people believe that, and we need to find out what that reason is so we can actually have a conversation.
Right. Well, there are – I've had many conversations along those lines, actually, and there is the idea that they have the right to protect their belongings and their family and their livelihood and all that. So what I would like them to understand and what I always speak to is it isn't about the Second Amendment. We don't have a problem. Most gun sense activists don't have a problem with the Second Amendment. What we have a problem with is who has the guns and what type of military weapons are out there. And, you know, why aren't we tighter on registration and on permitting, just like getting a car? I think we all have that common ground that we love people. We love our children. We want to keep them safe, for instance. But do we then go the opposite way and arm teachers and the entire school and, you know, concert halls and movie theaters? I mean, where does this stop? It doesn't seem to be fiscally.
Is there any way, do you think, all four of you, that if we had some 23, 24-year-olds in this room who really fervently believe that they should have an assault rifle, that we could have an intelligent conversation with them if we locked ourselves in a room for 4 hours? Is there a way to have a conversation with someone who believes nothing that we believe in? And would that be productive?
Can I take this?
Yeah.
As someone who grew up in a fairly conservative household and still has pretty conservative parents, I can really relate to this whole topic of having to really have an intellectual conversation with someone in a civil setting. And so I think the first part is a lot of stuff that we talk about nowadays and a lot of our dialogues on social media. And I think having a face-to-face conversation like we're doing right here is kind of the first step in breaking down the barrier of the ideology between the two people. But I think then getting someone into a genuine conversation, realizing, hey, you might think that, you know, there might be some fear around the fact that you might want to own a weapon, but then you start to realize that there's some statistics that are actually saying that it's more dangerous, in fact, to have a weapon in your household because of, you know, suicides, other reasons, than a household that doesn't have a weapon.
Or accidental shootings.
Right. And so, you know, you could actually take the argument in another direction and say that the amount of guns in society is actually putting you more at risk than you having the right to own a gun. And again, it's not that we're trying to take away people's rights to own guns. Law-abiding citizens do have a right, in my opinion, to own a weapon, not an assault weapon, but a weapon nonetheless. We want targeted measures on these kind of things. And so I think you're right, though. You know, a conversation takes a while to start to convince someone of something, but slow and steady is how you do it.
Christian is far more level-headed about this than I am. I have that emotional reaction. As you were sitting here describing that scenario, I don't think I'm capable of it, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's tough.
But that's what the other – I understand that completely, and the other side feels the same way. Mm-hmm. And so we have this deadlock here. And, you know, it has consequences even beyond guns. And one of the things that is frightening to me is a sociological term now called the atomization of society, where everyone is becoming less dedicated to the society as a whole and only looking at their own familiar tribe. And so we're breaking down the social mores that have basically kept this democracy functioning. And if we lose that, we really don't have a democracy. And, you know, whether it's, you know, some of the insanity we see from the national government or the rhetoric from both extremes, it just makes it even more likely that we're going to break, our society is going to break down. We have to have some way of having mutual trust. And this is one of the most explosive issues. And I wonder if there's a way to create a form for engaging the most radical on the other side to see if we can come to an intelligent middle ground.
I think to speak on what you were saying earlier, the majority of people in the nation do support these measures, these common sense gun control measures. And the fact of the matter is there's political action committees and interest groups that are in there and have an undue amount of influence kind of on the political system. And so really in a democratic world, and so you're saying kind of this whole argument's breaking down the fibers of the democracy in our society. I would argue really that the money coming in from this side, this political action committee of the NRA and these other people that represent a minority of not only gun owners but American citizens in general are actually the ones breaking down the moral fabric and the social fabric and the democratic fabric of the society more than is the people that are trying to convince others. And so again, it goes back to the fact that the majority of American citizens and gun owners want these measures put into place, and they're not being put into place, and you have to look at the reasons why. And those reasons why go back to the campaign contributions and the fact that these incumbents need this money in order to get reelected. And so,
but how can a parent living in Florida, right, just picking that, who has two little kids, vote for someone, which is likely because there's still a Republican majority, vote for someone tomorrow that did not vote to eliminate assault weapons in Florida? I mean, what? Explain that to me. If 70% of people agree with what we're saying here, how come they don't get voted out? What's happening?
Well, I just wanted to reiterate what Christian was saying. I couldn't agree more with that diagnosis that the conversation's not happening because there's a problem. And I think something that Emma Gonzalez articulated so well when she said we call BS is the conversation's not going to happen unless you start with that. You have to call BS on what's getting in the way of the conversation. There was another teen survivor from Parkland who was in that listening session with Trump where he had the I hear you mm-hmm. note written mm-hmm. on his card.
Right.
And the teen boy said, let's let the ideas flow here. And that phrase really stuck out to me. That hasn't been happening. So I feel like this is the beginning of a real democratic conversation. And the real culprit there, I think, really does fall on the NRA's efforts to gum up the works and really clog up the information pipeline and the two-way conversation.
And to distract by saying that it's mental illness where we should be paying attention. It's a multifaceted issue and problem. And mostly, you know, we have to look at the reasons behind the anger and the violence rather than, you know, diagnosing any mass shooter as having a mental illness.
So are you optimistic that we can do something about this? I'm looking at you.
I know you're looking at me. As the co-organizer of the march, I don't want to say that I'm not. I want to be hopeful. I want to say that I am optimistic. But, you know, I mentioned that I watched Columbine on the news, and then I watched Sandy Hook, and then I was living here in Santa Barbara for Isla Vista, and I had to face my students Monday morning after the Pulse nightclub shooting, and it just seems like it's never enough, and I just don't get it.
Well, I'm hopeful because I think those students, the teenage and the, you know, the young voters are the ones that are going to make a difference. I'm not overly hopeful, but I'm daring to be a little hopeful finally.
I'm with you.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro. where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank & Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank & Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank & Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Rayanne Napoleon, a PhD, assistant professor of chemistry at Santa Barbara City College, Kristen Walk, a student at Santa Barbara City College, Sarah Mayani, a parent and activist, and Lisa Newman, our famed producer. And, you know, the thing that that AHA has been talking about, and by the way, AHA was created 4 weeks after Columbine as a way of dealing with Columbine. AHA, 19 years ago, Rendy and Jennifer decided to do something about the violence that took place, the bullying that took place. I mean, they were pretty clever in those days before all the PR came out, realizing that as horrible as what happened, these kids were bullied and realizing the impact of bullying.
And guess what, Neil?
Yeah.
They're on next week.
They're on next week, yes. So today I read this article that was a show, I guess it was yesterday, on NPR, that talked about a study, not really a study, but a professor, Shane Jemerson from UCSB, and a professor at Professor Mayer at another university, which I can't find, from Rutgers, decided to try and do something about what happened in Florida a couple of weeks ago. And they had a call for action to prevent gun violence in the United States. And what they did is they created a web, an interactive web a platform to have a discussion among 200 universities and mental groups and various people to discuss what we're discussing today. And they came up with 10 solutions, or what 10 things we need to focus on. And the first thing I noticed is one of the things that's missing, which is in, and we'll talk about some of the things that isn't missing, but one of the things that I found ironic is they talk about studies and they talk about things that were done 10, 15 years ago that give us insight. And one of the things that we need to protest is that it's against the law for the federal government to do a study on gun violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really mind-boggling that, you know, because, and it made it so apparent because they found when Columbine took place, the FBI did a study right after Columbine, and what they found was that there was no profile that you could say a school shooter is, but they found out that most of the people who were involved in gun violence were people who were bullied, and almost every single one of them told someone before they did it that they were going to do it. So one of the things that this group came up with is the idea of telling, making it clear that if you hear about it, you should say something. The second thing they talk about is one of the precepts behind AHA, which is to teach emotional intelligence, to teach kids today about how destructive bullying is, because they found that a lot of students, and by the way, the numbers here are unbelievable about how many kids bring guns to school. The survey found that at least 125,000 students in California were actually threatened or injured by a school weapon on school grounds. 125,000 kids. And what the lesson here was is that when you look at the kids that have guns, when you interview them, so many of them felt they had to bring a gun to school because they were discriminated against, they were harassed, or they were bullied. So one of the good things about teaching emotional intelligence and, having restorative justice concepts and to teach kids about emotional intelligence is to stop some of the things that maybe lead to gun violence, which is to stop picking on kids.
Yeah, Sandy Hook Promise. It's a group out of Newtown that was started by parents of the kids that were murdered. And they have programs called Know the Signs. And they educate kids starting at, I think, at age 8 and up to 18. And it starts with the elementary schools, start with hello, to prevent kids from being isolated. All of that begins that early. Say something where if you see something or you know that someone is going to harm themselves or others, you have to say something. And they have signs of suicide for high school and middle school. And then they also train faculty and staff with safety assessment and intervention programs. So they're addressing those things on a nationwide level. They're very active.
How do you integrate that sort of specific solution in a walk? I mean, is there a way to, rather than say down with guns or whatever, how do you make it informational for people that may be in the middle?
Can I say something on this? So as someone who did get bullied younger, I think many of us did get bullied when you're younger too, or some degree of sort of bullying. I totally am enthusiastic about the work that a lot of these groups are doing, and a lot of the work in the mental health areas and a lot of this other work around guns, which is a complex issue. But a point that I'd like to come back to is that a lot of other countries have the same amount of people that suffer from mental health, and they have a lot of people who suffer from bullying, and they don't have the type of numbers that we do in terms of these kind of mass shootings and the amount of guns and the accessibility and the ease of which are just in the marketplace. And so I think while it is about those other aspects, about bullying, about mental health, we got to bring it back to the fact that it's also about guns in America and our special relationship with them and the fact that there is just too many in our country and they're too easily accessible for people. So to answer your question, I think the march is really focusing on the gun portion of this debate instead of these other things that, while important, while need to be addressed, need to be on this parallel line.
Yeah, as somebody that's helping with the march and organize this, one of the biggest hurdles for us thus far has been keeping that message clean and simple. And there's a lot of groups, and we've had a lot of outpouring from society, and we're so thankful from our local society for all of the help that people want to offer and their messages from their own individual groups. But we've had to say time and time again, this march is about taking to the streets and having students say, enough already.
And, Sarah, you've had a great deal of experience in various social issues. Are you optimistic that this can that this movement, particularly given the fact that these kids in Florida are starting a national movement of young people basically taking the front lines, do you think that we have a chance of changing?
I think we're at a tipping point myself, and that's just my opinion looking at what happened with the Me Too movement as well. You're seeing results, pretty rapid results coming from people giving voice to these really overdue truths that have been kept from the public discourse. So I think that it's overdue, and that's partly why you're seeing rapid change now. Or that's why that's what I'm seeing in the headlines, and that's what makes me hopeful about the impact that these Parkland student activists are having. I mean, they've been able to anticipate school shootings now for a while. You know, I mean, some of the charges, the conspiracy theorists, you know, have said, "Oh, it looks like they're too good," almost. You know, with their talking points, and it's like, well, they've been doing, you know, lockdown drills. It's not like it's impossible to predict another school shooting. Mm-hmm. And it's high time, it's past time that we heard people speak, you know, truth to power on this issue. So I am hopeful that something is happening.
When I was a kid, we went under our desk when we had a bomb drill. Under the desk is going to save you from a nuclear. Now SBCC had a active shooter exercise recently. Are those good, bad? Do they make people nuts, or do they actually help? And what is the benefit of active shooter programs?
So I participated in one a number of years ago. It was in response to the Isla Vista shooting, as a matter of fact. And I had a hard time with it as it was happening, and I had to get up and leave. And so after the training occurred, as a leader on the campus, as a faculty member, I had to say to some of the powers that be, look, you're having this active shooter training on campus. I'm not sure if this community is emotionally prepared for it, or perhaps just me. I'm not emotionally prepared for it. So what happened at that particular active shooter training on our campus was a local police officer came, and he started the active shooter training by playing the audio of the 911 calls from the Aurora movie theater shooting that happened a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting in the room, and the 911 call comes in, and there's the response to that and all the calls over the radio of they're unsure of where it's happening, or they're sure of, you know, the gunshots and how many there were and how many casualties and all of this. And as the video was playing, and it's just an audio recording, they didn't show anything. As it was playing, you know, this is like months after Isla Vista happened, I just couldn't take it. I had to get up and leave. And I just couldn't believe that this was part of the training. And so when I came back in the room, the police officer said, oh, you know, I'm preparing you for when it's going to happen. And that just seemed like such a bizarre concept to me.
Yeah, my son's school actually just had an active shooter drill, and from his description of it, I felt like he thought he was in a video game. You know, it was kind of, they were told to hide and freeze, don't move, don't make a sound. And I think it's kind of a really hard reality for them to grasp.
And as a mom, I'm also a mom of two, some of the things I'm seeing people share when their children are going through the active shooter trainings in the schools is, you know, I heard one story of a little girl being upset about her light shoes because if she's wearing light shoes,
it'll give her away.
It will give her away.
I remember that.
And it just broke my heart because I just think of my little guy who's going to turn three in a couple weeks. He loves his light shoes and they're amazing and they're the greatest thing that ever happened to him. And so to have a child have freaking light shoes being taken away from them because of this
reality danger.
I don't have anything intelligent to say about it. I'm just too emotional about it.
It is emotional.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton, and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa, and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership,
Will built 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online. Online at csuci.edu.
Not always.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Rayanne Napoleon, PhD and Assistant Professor of Chemistry at Santa Barbara City College, Christian Walk, student at Santa Barbara City College, Sarah Mayani, a Santa Barbara parent and activist, and our producer, Lisa Newman. So how do you use walk in a couple of weeks to not only get the message out, but to give people a sense of optimism? I mean, rather than just, get people all riled up, even you are a little bit less than optimistic. How do you get people to feel that this actually could make a difference?
As someone who studies American history, I'm a history major. You just look at every single major event in American history, the abolitionist movement, the suffragist movement, the civil rights movement, all of them are long hauls. And I think that this march has a goal of re-energizing our community and re-energizing the country, really. But it also needs to remind us that this is going to be a long haul. And this is going to take years and years and maybe decades to reverse some of the Supreme Court cases that we've recently had that have kind of rolled back some of the gun control measures, D.C. versus Heller, McConnell versus Chicago. Some of these Supreme Court cases have really gone up against the face of these laws that we're trying to initiate. So I think it really just goes back to reminding people that, no, this is not going to change tomorrow, just because everybody, even if every single person in the United States marched out, this law would not be changed tomorrow. But it's a long haul. It's a process, and we're all going to be part of that process and make sure that we come back next year and continue it. And it's a thought we got to have in our minds on a daily basis now, unfortunately, because of this reality.
And Sarah, we talked about motivating people not just to register but to vote. What can they vote on in California? I understand nationally we could vote for a president, but that's not for a congressperson. But what about what else is on the ballot or will be on the ballot or should be on the ballot that we could vote for?
Well, there is a governor's race in California, and people are discussing the different policies that the different candidates have. So Feinstein people think is likely to win re-election. I'm sorry. What am I saying? There's the Senate race in California. So Feinstein's likely to win, but I think that there are policies that she has championed that people can talk about in the context of that election.
She has the assault weapons ban.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then also the governor's race as well. So there are different candidates with different policies. So it's an occasion for people to figure out what policy they support and come up with arguments, in dinner table conversations to try to convince people of their point of view. So I just wanted to bring up a quote from Georgia Congressman John Lewis about how powerful the vote is. So whether you're in California or elsewhere, John Lewis says, "The vote is precious and sacred. It's the most powerful nonviolent tool we have." So the process of registering to vote and preparing to vote is something that has longer implications, particularly for first-time voters. Voting is habit-forming. It's the beginning of a role as a citizen. So I think that this march will have a really profound impact on young people in California and throughout the country. Do other people want to speak to what's on the ballot in California?
I wish I knew, actually, but I think a really good resource, and I'm hopeful that people will get interested and do some research, Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, Gabby Giffords' effort there, it grades all of the states on their gun violence prevention legislation. And although Massachusetts and California tend to lead the way, sorry, New York, there's always room for improvement. So you can go on their website and click on the state that you're interested in and find out what's in place and what's missing. So, you know, it varies state to state quite dramatically.
I think you're right to talk about the political aspect being the main part of this, having people go out and vote on legislation. But I think there's also an economic aspect to it. You have a couple of these companies like Dick's Sporting Goods coming out and saying that this is kind of the philosophy that they're going to maintain when they're doing business. And so supporting a business like that is also making a political statement on the economic side. I think going back to what we just mentioned about the dinner table conversations are just, in my mind, crucially important, because my dinner table conversations always get political. And when we start to talk about guns and a culture on gun violence and gun control, I think it's really good to get that conversation going again, because that wasn't always the political conversations we were having in my politicized household, but recently those are the conversations we're having, and I think that's a really important part too.
I think the march is also a great inspiration, or can be a great inspiration, for the younger generation and women and people who don't normally consider even running for office. You know, give it a go.
So SBCC, Kristen, you are, and I know SBCC very well, and I think I love the school, and I taught there for a number of years, but you are unique. You're incredibly intelligent and well-spoken and motivated. But over the years, I found City College not to be the most politically active institution in the world. Are they taking this seriously? Do you have interest among the students?
I would completely disagree with that sentiment. Currently, we have Dr. Beebe, who is our current president, who has reached out to me personally and feels very compelled by what we're doing and is very much behind it. And the faculty there,
Yeah, but that's the faculty, and I agree with you, but I'm talking about the students. I mean, you have 22,000 students there. How many are going to show up in 2 weeks?
No, I think you're making a really good point. And I think it starts with sort of the leaders on campus, the ones with the clubs, the ones with the organizations, student governments. These places are where we've started, and I've already started to go and kind of talk to those club leaders, treasurers, vice presidents, and trying to get them. And the initial response I'm getting is that everybody's on board. Most of the people in my generation support all of these measures, support what we're doing out here. And even if they don't, they like the fact that we're, at least going to your point, getting out there and being political in some way or another. And so I do think that, you know, there's going to be some problems with kind of energizing students at CC. But on the flip side of that, most of them agree with us and agree with our sentiments and want to go out and help us on this march.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market in Delhi, open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Rayanne Napoleon, a assistant professor of chemistry at Santa Barbara City College, Kristen Walk, a student at Santa Barbara City College, Sarah Mayani, a Santa Barbara parent and activist, and our producer, Lisa Newman. So I have one last substantive point that I'm just curious about. One of the things that scares me is the whole issue of home rule. You know, at least we live in a place that is does ban assault rifles. There is legislation floating around to permit people in any state that permits you to have a gun or a rifle to bring it to a state, whether that state permits it or not. And I think getting the word out about that would motivate people. People think, well, I live in California. What do I care? Well, you do care, because if this continues, they're going to let people who live in a state where you don't even need a license to get a gun or training to come and spend time in Disneyland.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, you know, we do have to take care of our own space, but we have to realize that, for instance, the Goleta post office shooting, the woman who committed that actually went into Arizona to get her firearm and then came back over and did the crime here, too. So it's
okay,
a big problem.
So in the last 2 minutes, how can we help? Can people donate money to this group, or how do you need money? I mean, is it just sweat work, or is there money needed, or how can the people out there listening help?
So it is a lot of sweat work, but we would absolutely appreciate the donations as well. There's a number of things that we're trying to pay for, day of, and things like that. So the way that you can support our movement is by going to sbcallsbs.org.
Say that again slowly.
sbcallsbs.org. On that website, we have both a PayPal donation link as well as a T-shirt sale that's going on right now. So if you want to buy the T-shirt, show up for the march and wear it, that would be great. We can only do pre-sale, so make sure that your order gets in the next week. And if you just want to donate to our fund, then PayPal is the way that you can do that.
And what time does it begin? What time do you want people there?
We'd love people to start showing up at 10 a.m. We're going to have some voter registration, like we mentioned. The rally will officially start at 11 a.m. We have Senator Hannah Beth Jackson coming as one of our big speakers. And then, like I said, we take to the streets at 12 p.m.
And where do they go at 10 o'clock?
Sorry, forgot to mention that. De La Guerra Plaza here in Santa Barbara.
Okay, great.
We also have a Facebook event up, too, if you check it out, Santa Barbara March for Our Lives. Not the page, but the event itself. Click on that. Click you're going. Or you're interested, and that'd be great for us, too.
And this is also taking place nationally as well.
Correct, on the same exact day.
Okay.
So if you go to marchforourlives.org, you can find the locations of marches all around the country, and ours is registered there as well.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for something else you want to say?
Yeah, we just want to mention that the other student organizers, Rachel Ng, who's a UCSB student, and Ethan Steiner, who's a local high school student. They couldn't be here today. And also Robbie Haynes Fisher. The ironic part of this being student-led is that they're actually literally in classes.
I was supposed to be in class, too. Sorry,
I'll give you a note. Thank you so much for thank you so much for being here. Thank you guys for all you're doing for all of us. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.